Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we're wondering how many seagulls it would take to take out an army of haddocks in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Yes, that's right, since we last spoke, the FA Cup draw has finally been made and we're at home to Grimsby Town in the FA Cup quarter-final at the Amex. Fingers crossed, anyone who's followed Brighton for any length of time knows how this will end up. The home FA Cup quarter-final against the League Two Mariners has many dreaming of Wembley, but it's best not to be counting our seagulls just yet. Cup fever was the last thing on the players' minds as West Ham visited the Amex on Saturday and were promptly hammered as our 4-0 victory maintained our European push. Next up, we travel to beleaguered Leeds, who sit just above the relegation dotted line and will be hoping to give themselves some breathing room. Let's hope we have something to say about that. Also this week, and perhaps most importantly, we've seen Moises Caicedo put pen to paper in a new deal that will keep him at the club until 2027. Rumours that he will now be on £5.50 a week have yet to be confirmed. And we've also seen women's boss Yen Xu leave the club after just 3 months in charge. Joining me today is, of course, the inflatable haddock, Alan Wares. And we're delighted to welcome back the Argus's chief sports writer, Brian Owen. Welcome back, Brian. Lovely to see you as ever. And you're looking very healthy.
Am I? Yeah, that's because you can't see my ankle. But I am. Plenty to talk about from what you say now. I don't know if haddocks come in armies. It's probably a shoal, isn't it?
Like
a navy, and if you're going to get military, but yeah.
Well, we haven't banned them from the Amex like Southampton, so maybe that's something in our favour.
And I will say this about your intro there: of all the adjectives you've ever said about me, you've never said the Alan Wares before. So it's nice to know of all the Alan Wareses there are out there. I am.
What? There's more.
Well,
I need to hide?
Well, Wares isn't exactly a common name out there, is it? So, it is. It has got a little bit fractious in the household. For those that don't know, my better half is from a village called Waltham, just outside Grimsby. While she has absolutely no interest in football, she does have an inflatable haddock. Go figure. That's not for anyone to comment on, by the way.
Yeah, we've already seen off my partner in this FA Cup run, so let's hope we can add to that and get ourselves to Wembley. Now, Brian, obviously it's been a big week for the Albion, a massive win over West Ham, and everyone was buoyant going into that game with the news about Moises Caicedo.
Yeah, it was one of those big Fridays, in fact, which come around sometimes, partly because it's the press conference day. So we had the 1:30 press conference, which was about the same time as Roberto De Zerbi's ban was announced via Twitter, just as he was about to come into the room. Then at 6 o'clock, wasn't it? It was the Caicedo announcement on Friday, and then the game on Saturday, preceded by a big goalkeeping decision or selection decision, re the goalkeeper. So it was one of those. I did mention in my piece, not long ago, we had one of those sort of dream days where the World Cup winner came back and Brighton beat Liverpool 3-0, and this was like Caicedo signs, the man who the league leaders want, re-signed a new deal. And then Brighton swept aside West Ham 4-0. So it's just one of those busy, sort of almost like dream days when you look back.
Did you get the heads up on the Caicedo story before it broke?
No, they just announced it, which I don't know, if it would have been a good idea to let us give an inkling and give it more of a build up. But no, it just came out at 6 o'clock. So yeah, it was just.
Were you as shocked as the rest of us?
I guess, I don't know, shocked is the right word. I sort of, when something like that happens, because bear in mind, I was just about to do our back page and I had two stories to go on the back page. And then all of a sudden that came up. And so it's almost like when you're covering a game and the match is going on, you're not really thinking about, am I surprised by that score or am I pleased or anything? It's almost like just the practicality, right? Where am I going to put this? So it's hard to say, but thinking back, I guess it sort of makes sense. The other thing is everything that Caicedo has said afterwards is consistent with what he said to me after the Leicester game when I spoke to him briefly. And there's that anomaly of the social media posts, but I think it just makes total sense, doesn't it? And it doesn't mean he's going to stay here for however many years.
There's not a good, at all,
you think,
no.
You think he might go this summer, but I don't think that's definite by any means. Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I wasn't necessarily expecting it, but you do sort of expect the unexpected in a way when you're doing these things.
You do. Well, I mean, I think you've said it before when, you know, you're writing a piece on a particular game and it's almost sort of like zizzing out to a sort of a either a draw or, a, you know, it's, you know, the thing is just, you know, it's almost like the two teams have given up. You're beginning to write your story and then you get three goals in injury time. And you've got to completely rewrite your story. I guess that was what you had on the Friday. You're just doing your articles. And then the club saying, right, great, 6 o'clock, I can go for my gin and tonic now. Oh, Caicedo's re-signed.
To be honest, I'm not that brisk at working, so I can think of like one or two colleagues who I used to have who would have had things done a lot more, more promptly than me. And also Friday, I'm getting back from the press conference and I was traveling on the train because of his broken ankle, so it was all a bit slow. So by the time it came up to like just leading, I mean, did we get a heads up? Yes, we did get a WhatsApp, to be fair, but it wasn't like an hour before, it was a little while, a few minutes before, so I've been slightly unfair there. It was probably about 10 to 6 or something, we got a little message on WhatsApp, so there was that. It wasn't like it was mentioned in the afternoon, but actually from my point of view, in terms of obviously the first thing, you put it on the website anyway, so
yeah.
In terms of the newspaper, I was just about to start the back page, so we're all fine. It was good timing. I had to put Buonanotte inside, but apart from that, that's all.
Yeah. Now, Al, I mean, we were travelling to Brighton early on Saturday morning because, yeah, we had to do a photo shoot for the radio station, which was...
That makes us sound much more pompous and important than we really are.
Yeah. But so we were travelling to this radio station for a photo shoot, though. And we were you expressed your surprise about the news, and
this is one of those stories that you remember where you were when you broke. Now I know it's only a local story for us. Well, it's probably a national story across Ecuador as well, but it's a local story for us. I suppose mildly national, and in as much as Chelsea and Arsenal and maybe the occasional Man U fan may have sort of raised their eyebrows and then slumped back into their seats and then started grizzling on social media like far too many of them do in their own septic tank barrel, what do you call it, echo chamber thing. But it was a case of knowing where you were when you heard it. And I was in a tiny, and this is, I'm giving a plug to someone here, is a tiny little sort of micro bar in Ferring at the back of a delicatessen called the Snug. And I was just having my 11th pint of heavy in there. And the woman who's just going behind the bar to do some work in there, she said, recognised me as an Albion fan. And she said, oh, haven't you heard the great news? And I said, and I just thought it was, well, I've just got my ticket for the Grimsby match. I said, yeah, you know, the tickets are on. I said, no, 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 no. No, Caicedo. So I'm out there on my phone, let out this ridiculous yelp, which the pet dog in the bar started howling along with, before eventually calming down and thinking, well, that's blown a raspberry and a rather big hole in so many citizen journalists' arrogant contempt for the Albion. I mean, it just goes to show the ambition that the club has, that they can actually not only withstand so many high bids, but actually then turn around and say, we had this under control all the time.
Yeah. Are you suggesting that Fabrizio Romano hadn't been beaten to the scoop there? I mean,
no names, no pack drill, but yeah, Fabrizio Romano. I'm not naming him in any names, but yeah.
Sorry, Albert, to go back right to the start of that answer about a local story, it is a national story and it is an international story. It is, I suppose, local as well, but it is very much a national story because it's a player who Arsenal wanted and others want. And I mean, I messaged straight away the radio station in Ecuador and told them, and they were getting back to me, oh, what's the details and how long for, and is he going to stay and all this. So I think it is a national story now. That's the point. That's where we've got to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was reading through, I did make a point of trawling through lots of the timelines of it and to see what the reaction from other clubs.
Oh, it was hilarious.
Because, I mean, obviously, Arsenal fans were well, interesting.
Well, Man United, every single time you had an Arsenal fan saying, oh, well, you know, you're trying to sort of stitch us up like you did. You're not going to do to us what you did to Chelsea. You know, you're just trying to stitch us up. Yeah. He's not worth this, this and this. And you think, well, you're not in a position to comment. And then by the time it comes back to, well, we didn't want him anyway. And you think, you're really dealing with a bunch of children here.
But I mean, let's not beat about the bush here. I mean, obviously, as for Brighton and Hove Albion, this is massive news. This guy is someone who's now a world star, like you correctly said there, Brian. And obviously, you featured at the World Cup, was absolutely brilliant at the World Cup as well. He's been brilliant for us. Obviously, we've had these offers from massive clubs. And, you know, I mean, he's the sort of player that I can see he will move on at some point and he will go for a lot of money. But I don't think it will necessarily be to a club in this country. I can easily see him playing for like Real Madrid or someone like that.
Yeah, definitely. And he's huge at home in Ecuador. He is huge. Anything about him, I can remember messages on that Friday when he did his when that message appeared about his so-called farewell or what have you. So he is a huge name back home. And you're right, he could easily be a Madrid. And Madrid sort of feels about right as well. I mean, he said to me that he doesn't listen to it, he's not bothered and what have you. But De Zerbi did say afterwards that he thought he could see a difference in Caicedo post new contract compared to in the aftermath of the transfer window.
In what way?
Performance. Did he say with something like we've got Caicedo back or he's back or something along those lines? I mean, he did have a very good game on them.
He was superb.
It was magnificent. Okay, well, I mean, let's move on to that game then. And it was a lot of fun, wasn't it? It was. But the big news before the game, Brian, was a massive change in goal. I don't think anyone of us saw that coming. I mean, we've been saying on the show that Sanchez is very much in credit despite his howler at Selhurst the other day. But I mean, it's interesting that De Zerbi's come out and said that Steele is more in tune with my sort of football.
But it has looked like that, hasn't it, in the games that he's played, with that passing the ball out from the back, going back to say the Arsenal game. Probably at Forest Green as well. I don't remember that so much, but I did particularly note it in the Arsenal game in the Carabao Cup. So it has looked like that. So there was sort of logic. It was one of those decisions which, when it came, it was almost a shock, but not necessarily a surprise when you then thought it through. But yeah, nobody saw that coming. And actually, on Friday, it was 1:30, his press conference, and he was asked, how close is Steele to getting into the Premier League team? And he does give bits and pieces away about his team. For example, I confirmed with him that Dunk was going to play for his 400th appearance at Stoke. And on this occasion, he sort of spoke in a way, I can't remember his exact words, but it was like, oh, I'd like to play him. At some point, he'll deserve a game sort of thing. And he literally could have said he's 24 hours away because it was that, you know, he'd made the decision by that point. But he was, I think everybody shocked, but thinking about it, not surprised almost, is the way most people seem to have taken that.
It's nothing like the gear crunch that I think the rest of us felt when Graham Potter replaced Matty Ryan with Robert Sanchez. Now obviously the fact that you had Sanchez had only ever played for the under-23s and the occasional game from memory, with the Stiffs. And whereas Jason Steele's had he's had a kind of funny career. If you're not you're literally your number one goalkeeper at your club, you can actually spend a lot of time, a lot of your career, not playing a lot of football. Yeah. And I remember when Jason Steele arrived, and I'm not sure if it was directly from Sunderland, but
it was from Sunderland.
Yeah, he come from Sunderland, and the Sunderland fans absolutely despised him. They thought he was useless. Now, I mean, I suppose that if we're going to be sort of really browbeating anyone, I think we'll probably remember his dropsy against Newport in the Cup a couple of years ago, made up for by four amazing penalty saves. But I think the point seems to come across, certainly in the Cup game, and let's face it, the Cup, when we're talking about the Cup, we're talking against Liverpool here. He did look comfortable with De Zerbi's style. Mm. But I also would have said that after Sanchez's howler at Palace, the following game, which was Fulham, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was a couple of shaky moments there. And, you know, it's easy to be wise after the event, or even observing from a distance. But then we always look at the way that the team plays. You think, oh, my God, they're playing so nervously. How are we going to get out of this? And you realise it's all part of the plan. But when you see a goalkeeper playing nervously and not doing what they could or should do, then, yeah, the writing's sometimes on the wall. So as much as we all thought, well, Sanchez has got the shirt because, as you said, AD, he is massively in credit.
Yeah, I mean,
still, hang on, Jason still coming up and taking Sanchez's place is not the big, let's say, gear crunch that it might have been, say, even 6 months ago.
I mean, it's a weird one because, I mean, obviously, I'm still nervous as hell when I'm watching us like do it at the back. But I mean,
you haven't seen Sanchez or Steele really be part of something that messes it up, have you?
But I mean, having watching the highlights again today and from the weekend, it was the margins. I think there was a couple of times where West Ham nearly nicked in, but all of a sudden the ball was just getting under the pitch, and we're scoring a goal. It's just.
But that's the point of it.
That's the point.
You have to tent them in. And the one was the notable one was the move for the second goal, wasn't it? Although it was the move for the back click, which led to the second goal. And that you could almost sense the noise in the West Ham fans then that they thought, we've got them. And actually, that was a good bit of play by Caicedo. I'm not sure it was all totally as drawn up. But he does play that style better still. And also, it was Potter as well that spoken great things about his sort of attitude and his role within the squad and what have you. And I guess that's now sort of, that's not why he's in the team, but it makes it sort of nicer that he's now got his chance.
Yeah, and obviously he's just signed a new contract as well. And, you know, would he have signed a contract if he wasn't going to get the opportunity, or was he just happy to sit in the sidelines?
So you're talking about Jason Steele here?
Yeah.
He's not exactly in the shop window, was he? And at 32, clearly sort of he's fitted in with De Zerbi's style, and De Zerbi has dropped his main goalkeeper. And when that happens, there's always a kind of a raised eyebrow, no matter who it is. Now Sanchez, I think he came from memory, came in for one game, was dropped, and then came back again and then kept the shirt. I can see it where... And who can second guess Roberto De Zerbi? I can see it where Steele is now keeping the shirt, certainly for the time being. Does that mean that Sanchez is going to be playing the cup games? Don't know. But I think that Jason Steele is certainly worth his call up. And it's not a case about, and I do hate the phrase, giving them a chance. No, no player should ever be given a chance. They have to work and earn and deserve their starts, not be given a chance.
Okay, well, in the week where we're celebrating Solly March Day 2 weeks early, let's talk about Solly. And he had a brilliant chance very early in the game. This was brilliant play by Solly, but what the hell were West Ham doing? It's not the first time I'm going to be saying what the time is were West Ham doing, but it's like they just stood off him and stood off him and stood off him.
Can I give him my two-word answer on that?
Yeah.
Don't care.
I mean, it was
sort of the same.
It just happened in slow motion, didn't it?
They just, I mean, I suppose it's one of those where if you don't know what you're going to do, how are the opposition going to know what to do? Because I don't think Solly March set off with the idea of dribbling into the penalty area and shooting. He was looking for passes at pretty much every angle around him. And in the end, but the first, I was going to say tackle, the first sort of dangle of the leg, I can't remember who it was pretty awful, wasn't it? And then that opened the door, and he probably should have scored once he got into that position.
Well, it just did seem to genuinely open up for him. It's not as though he went flying past anyone. I mean, I think an interesting way of looking at this is when you do look at, and I don't tend to do so generally, but is looking at opposition, either YouTube content or you know, a given club's equivalent of this show. Obviously, West Ham have come into the game. They had a very good win over Nottingham Forest and played pretty decently against Manchester United. But we're also aware of the fact that, you know, Brighton are a bit of a bogey team. Well, not so much a bogey. I think it's the entire nose during a heavy cold. So they were kind of wary of it. And I was watching a couple of these YouTube channels. And they were very complimentary, and they were sort of saying, you know, De Zerbi's done an amazing job, and the whole thing that we know, that where we've bought low and sold high, et cetera, and here we are still, you know, in the lofty position that we're in. And of course, once you then get stuffed, then your consideration for the opposition takes a little bit of a battering. However, the interesting thing of watching these guys is that they saw that as a truly appalling West Ham performance. Now, was that down to them being appalling, or was that down to us being really, really good? it's amazing how many teams do have such a poor game playing against us. I'm looking at you, Liverpool, when, back in January. I'm looking at you, Everton, at Christmas. It still strikes me as a little bit unfair in terms of consideration as to how we're considered. I think that other fans are waking up to it, but by the same token, West Ham fans are fiercely loyal, are proud, and I think that what we've got to take from the game is that their team, well, frankly, bottled it that day on Saturday.
Yeah, Declan Rice wasn't completely over enamoured by their performance either, by, judging by his comments, and he basically said that that West Ham just didn't have an answer to us. We were just and they were just running on empty by the end of the game.
Well, his silly £100 million tag was going down £5 million every time he touched the ball. Declan Rice, Brian, I mean, he's a funny character across the national and international scene, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, like yourself, I wasn't really looking at it from that point of view. I mean, it's quite good to watch games, but I think it's really good, enjoyable now to watch games back and appreciate the football without thinking of the practicalities of what's the score and how long left and which substitute's coming on next and all that sort of thing. So, I had a bloke go past me because I sit right on the edge of the press box these days, and you get comments sometimes, and they're okay, but usually quite friendly. And one bloke came past me at the end. And he said, "Is that the worst West Ham team you've ever seen?" And I literally thought, That's not how I'm looking at it." And it is the best Brighton team I've seen, and that would have been a really good reply if I'd have thought about it there and then, rather than 3 minutes later.
Okay,
so. Brighton, it's the two teams' performances in any game are dependent on each other, aren't they, to a certain extent? And so,
okay. Well, let's talk about that best Brighton team that you've seen. And obviously, it ended up in this being awarded a penalty at the end of it. But the football leading up to that was just breathtaking.
Yeah. And that's one of those that maybe you don't appreciate at the time. You think of the Solly, who passed it? Oh, was Solly March, and who fouled him, and all this sort of stuff. But how far it went back, and that's another example why I say it's so good to watch games back. I mentioned the Arsenal game, which I watched the whole thing back on their website, the Carabao Cup tie, and you can then just enjoy the football. And also with the Jason Steele bits and pieces we're talking about, the passing from the back, you can enjoy that thinking this won't go wrong. And so, yeah, that football. But what about, I mean, all the moves, the was it the second goal we mentioned there from Steele passing to Dunk to Caicedo, the last goal Steele started, he might not have started the move, but he was involved in the move. And the one where people did mention about what a good move it was the Mitoma goal, which actually started from West Ham giving the ball away. And then it was really, but no, there's so much of that football. It's just well worth looking back and watching it without having to think about what's the score going to be.
Yeah, well, it was a penalty. I don't think anyone can have too many arguments about that.
But... again, even watching the West Ham fans saying, "Yeah, Stonewall got no problems with it." It wasn't vicious. It doesn't have to be a fine. Dermot Gallagher, if you really don't want to tear what's left of your hair out, Aid, don't watch him because, I mean, we had a real sort of worm stew as to his thing. Yes, he agreed with the penalty, but could understand if it wasn't given, but we'd be surprised, and therefore it might have been overturned. Dermot, it was a penalty. I mean, it doesn't have to be a thigh-high career ender. It doesn't have to be studs autographing your shins. It was just a clumsy tackle.
But the penalty was taken, and Alexis McAllister scored his first goal since becoming a world champion.
Oh, I thought you were going to say how he tucked it away.
With aplomb.
Yeah, well, good. At least some things don't change.
You know I'm not going to miss any opportunity to mention the fact that he's a world champion.
Oh, okay. Right, you are. To be fair, I'll tell you what I do like, and it makes me feel a little bit easier, given our hitherto previous record with penalties, is, you know, the whistle goes and the stadium goes into a slight hush and he takes his time.
Yeah,
that is actually kind. I find that a little kind of comforting that he's not rushing it. He'll do it in his own time, in his own way. And it was a good penalty, and no keeper would have touched that. The only way a keeper would have saved it was because he was starting off in the wrong position in the first place. So, yeah, great pen.
AD, the goalkeeper, also being a world champion as a substitute for France 4 years earlier.
There you go.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, that doesn't count. He's France.
I think it's fair enough, Adrian. Okay.
But yeah, but McAllister, it's nice to see him back amongst the goals, and he very nearly got himself another one where he tried to recreate his goal at Middlesbrough, Brian.
Yeah, and before that, actually got into a good position with the left foot shot over, and I sort
yeah,
of
he did, yeah.
think he could be scoring more goals from the positions he's getting into. Obviously, he got that penalty. It's one of those where you say about teams, you know, you'd be more worried if they weren't getting the chances. But I think he's had chances to score a few more of like, so if we're being ultra critical, is that something that's the one area? If he could improve that, if he could be putting those chances away arriving from late, but he'd be literally a sort of complete attacking midfielder, I suppose, if you want to play him in that role.
The back heel was the one that came from the end of that particular move that we were talking about earlier. It wasn't actually a goal. The goal came from the resultant corner.
Yes,
it was a back heel. And actually, if he'd had a little bit more about him, he'd have realised that there are actually two Brighton players unmarked behind McAllister. So if either of them had given a shout, then, you know.
While we're talking about goals, I mean there's been a running joke on this show with Andy Bass when we're doing our pre-season predictions that he confidently predicts every season that we're going to score 50 goals this season.
I thought it was usually 40.
No, it's been 50 for the last 4 years, he said it. And we're currently sitting on 43. We're in a really good chance of doing it. But one of my pre-season predictions, not this season, I didn't do it, but is that we're going to end up with more than one person in double figures. Again, that is something that could actually happen, Brian.
Yeah, I guess so. Although Trossard's leaving, I suppose, hasn't helped unless you're including his Arsenal goals. But I must say, I haven't looked at the actual stats for who's got how many goals, but they're all chipping in, aren't they? And I just think they've beaten their record now for goals in a Premier League season with 15 games to go. This is already their high scoring season. But yeah, there are different options. I think there are players there. Mitoma probably should have scored a few more. Solly March as well. So yeah, you could be right. Let's see how it goes. But there's a few options.
They could all have scored quite a few more. And the one person, actually, I think is probably most wasteful this season, I think it's probably been Danny Welbeck.
So, I mean, in total at the moment, this is all competitions. This isn't just isn't just league goals. But we've got Carew and Alexis both on 8 and Pascal on 7, Leandro on 7, Solly's on 5. Evan Ferguson in all competitions is actually on 5 as well, which is great for him. So you know, and the more this run continues, the more chance we've actually got of, like, you know, racking up some decent scores. I'm just enthralled by this team. I'm just so excited by watching them at the moment.
Okay, but let me throw this one back at you then, AD, and you, Brian. Now, I know it's not something I'd ask you to do in the here and now. Yeah, because, you know, we've only got an hour. But if you were to name your all-time Albion 11, how many would be from the current side? And the reason I would ask that, and it's a hypothetical question for now, is because I genuinely think that this team is much, much bigger and better than the sum of its parts. Don't get me wrong. We have a World Cup winner. We have a World Cup midfield alongside him. Do we have world-class strikers? Is everyone sort of so high in their game? It's one to throw open, but of all play, would your all-time Albion 11 be the 11 that started at West Ham against West Ham? Would it be, you know, those who tore Man United apart 4-0?
When you're putting those things together, though, it's very, very difficult. You see, obviously, you're talking about different times, different pitches, different divisions.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, I mean,
Peter O'Sullivan season.
playing in this team on these pitches would tear it up, as would Wardy. But it's like, you know, Bobby Zamora in his pomp in this team would tear it up. But, you know,
The 2011 season was one of my all-time favourite seasons. And you think, how many great players were there from that? But you have to remember, it was still only the third division.
No, I was going to say, I don't really know. Like you say, it is hard to compare. I did watch quite a lot of the 83 Cup final when John Motson died, looking for some lines of his commentary. And the football, as you say, was different. The pitches were really different. And the football we're seeing now is more attractive. That was one game, and that was a cup final where one team might have been trying to spoil it for the other, perhaps. But the actual standard of football we're seeing, partly because of the players, partly because you're getting players from all over the world. You know, you've got a far, and that's why it's not fair to compare as well, because you attract the net of where you're getting these players is literally worldwide. You know, that team from, say, the early 80s might have been fantastic had the two Peruvian boys stayed, or had there been Elsa side players from the Far East or what have you. But I think, yeah, this it is hard to compare, but you're essentially comparing, aren't you, that team that finished 13th with the team now, if you're looking for the greatest players, a greatest 11, I would guess.
And how many of them scored with their chest? This is the question. And moving swiftly on.
I was going to say, from a defensive point of view, in the Premier League, that was probably one of the worst goals. I mean, we don't care because they'll go in however we feel like it. But if that was us defending, we wouldn't be having such a pleasant conversation, Adrian, believe me.
No, we would not be having that. But it was just funny. I mean, again, where were the marking? Now, another player who's yet to break his duck for the Albion. Actually, the South American youngsters. One of them is going to score soon. Between Onciso and Sarmiento. And Onciso did have a brilliant effort tipped onto the bar by Areola.
Enciso, at times, yes. I thought at Stoke he was quite poor, and I thought he was a lot better in this game. And obviously, we're judging him on cameo performances, quite short performances. But he's I've seen him in the under 21s a couple of times, and he's been very busy, very direct, very much going for goal. But yeah, that was quite an encouraging few minutes from him. And obviously, Buonanotte, another one of them, has had the ball in the net, but disallowed for a narrow offside. So Sarmiento, I sort of always think he could be the next one. He feels like he's close to the breakthrough, and it's not quite happened as yet, but he's not far off.
While we're talking about Buonanotte, Brian, I know you spoke to him this week about his call up, and that's really exciting for him, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so, and very unexpected. And he got a message from one of Scaloni's. He said from one of Scaloni's assistant, I did insert the word Lionel when I put it in the paper just for a little bit of more respect. But after the Stoke game, straight after the Stoke game, they told him. So there's five young players being called up. One of them is 24, but the others are teenagers. So they're sort of, I suppose, getting them involved, getting them up with the squad, with the world champions coming home. But 18 years old, but he's so mature to talk to. He's such a grown-up character to talk to, as he has to be, I suppose, when you look at that.
And this is massive as well, Brian, because I mean, you just said it there, this is their homecoming. This
Yeah.
is their first game since becoming the world champions, and
Yeah.
it's gonna be a party.
At the Monumental Stadium where they won the 78 final. That's the first game back against Panama. I think there's 35 in the squad, so I'm not expecting Buonanotte to get on, to be honest. But there's a second game as well against Curacao. Is that the correct pronunciation? Sorry if I've
Yeah,
got
it
that
is,
wrong. So
yeah.
they're not exactly testing friendlies. They are sort of lap of honour type friendlies, but they'll all be back there. And yeah, he's I think possibly the good thing for Buonanotte is that there's so many players coming out of Argentina that there's not the focus on how's he doing, how's he doing, that I get from people like Caicedo, Mitoma, Enciso, where they are really the flag bearers for their country, whereas Buonanotte is just another. I'm just thinking of feedback I get on stories and contacts I get from reporters in their home countries. Even McAllister is not under the radar, but there's not so much attention on him. Whereas if anything happens with Caicedo or Mito, I mean, the amount of Japanese media I've done of late has been incredible. Whereas Buonanotte can be a little bit more under the radar from in terms of media back home. That's the sort of sense I get anyway.
Just going to say the issue about Enciso coming on and having the shot that he did, and it was a great shot, and just for the sake of it being 6 inches higher, would have actually nestled nicely in the top corner. And there's your story. Probably more so than in the under 21s is to blood them when you're 3-0 up and cruising, and you see that the opposition's heads have dropped. And frankly, 4-0, I think, ultimately flattered West Ham. That's the best time for them to come on, where they can make hay, where they can play without fear. I mean, none of them seem to be taken to the Premier League with any fear. And I'm sure that at some point, they'll either kick on or they'll have a dip and then kick on again. Because we haven't had it with Caicedo. I mean, since he got into the first team, he's just gone one way and never looked back. Whereas obviously, players do have these sort of cycles of having a dip in form. And when you're 18, you're not necessarily going to be a world beater every game. So putting them on in that particular position is perfect for him. And like you say, a great save from the keeper. But, you know, what a story that would have been in Paraguay for Enciso to have scored.
And how busy Brian would be in Paraguay.
Yeah, I know. But what I would say to that, though, is what about the Bournemouth game where it was 0-0 in the balance and they could have easily conceded on the counter and ended up with nothing. And he threw on Buonanotte for his debut. He threw on Enciso, Sarmiento. So it's not just putting them on when the going's good for the sort of the lap of honour, so to speak. He did put them on when the game's absolutely on the line. And it could have backfired.
Faith in them, basically. And it's like, absolutely. I mean, we were saying last week that we're surprised that they're getting so many minutes so soon. But and it's great. But it's great that they've got faith in them. Okay, well, look, just before we move on, obviously, we've got to talk about the Mitoma goal, which was, again, just liquid football.
Well, it was actually just, again, a really good build-up. And actually, the more I've watched it, the more I've appreciated. Because there was a moment in that build-up where I'm thinking, Solly March, we know you've got a right foot. Please use it. I mean, when I say you've got a right foot, more so than just for standing on. I mean, to be fair, obviously, he did sort of, you know, he crocked himself earlier in the game with a pass where I think he got more ground than ball. When it's a game that's as close to Solly March day as you can get, it's typical that he would actually then go and crock himself. But yeah, he recovered from that, did well. But at that point, you think, was the shot on? But fair enough, kept his head. Played it out to Gross, I think it was, on the right-hand side.
Yeah, another assist with Pascal, yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it was a very patient and well-crafted goal. Left Johnson on his backside again. But, yeah, I think probably on balance, a better goal with every watching of it.
Absolutely. And then the gloss from Danny Welbeck and an assist for Buonanotte there. So,
that's one of the headlines, isn't it, Adi, that Buonanotte got an assist. All he did was, it was actually a fairly nondescript pass into Welbeck. It's just that
it wasn't an assist. This whole assist, he passed it to him. Yes, he was the last person to touch it. But, yeah. I mean, Danny Welbeck, he got the assist.
It's his goal.
It was like, you know, it was just wonderful. Anyway, he can text Alexis McAllister on his new golden iPhone that Messi bought. anyway, moving swiftly on, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us another shirt to have a look at for this week, and continuing his shirts that look like rugby shirt series, I think, Al.
Yeah, it's not that clever, is it? I couldn't tell you which rugby club it is, but I'll have a go at the football club in question. To describe it, it's red and blue horizontal stripes, so we call them hoops, interlaced with white in between. So it goes red, white, blue, white, red, white, blue, right? It's kind of got a checkered collar. It's made by the Sporting Cock. Sponsored by Auto Windscreens. There's a rounded badge on it saying 1886 with a laurel leaf just above that and a picture of what looks like a sandcastle. Someone's been mucking about with the name above the badge, but I am going to guess, irrespective of the fact that the only time I've ever known Auto Windscreens on someone's shirt is Birmingham City, and it's clearly not that. I'm going to guess that it's actually another one of Phil's holiday shirts that you brought back from Australia. Above and beyond that, no idea.
I don't think they have auto windscreens in Australia, Brian.
I don't know. I really don't. Like you say, it does look like a rugby shirt, and it's the only one like Al I can remember is auto windscreens is Birmingham City, which obviously isn't, from the badge and the colour. So it could be something Scottish. Vague.
I'll put you out of your misery. It's neither of those. It is British. I will give you that.
Okay, but it's an away shirt, isn't it?
Northern Ireland. It is an away shirt. And this is what Phil has to say about this particular jersey. He says, here is your shirt of the week, chosen for no particular reason. This is the 1996 to 1998 away shirt of Northern Irish side Linfield FC.
Okay.
Linfield play in the Northern Irish Premiership, where they are currently third. They play at the 18,434 capacity Windsor Park. The club owns the stadium and the Irish Football Association rents it for them for the Northern Ireland national team. So far this season, Linfield have played 57 competitive matches. Their season started on the 5th of July with four games in the qualifying rounds of the Champions League, and then four more games in the Europa and Europa Conference League qualifiers. They've played 29 games so far in the league and 13 games in various cup competitions. The side was formed in 1886 in South Belfast by workers in the Ulster Spinning Company's Linfield Mill. The club holds a number of domestic and world records. They have won the top flight Irish League on 56 occasions. In total, they have won 110 league titles, counting both top flight and promotion years. Add to that 44 Irish Cups, 10 Irish League Cups and 4 Charity Shields. In addition, they've won a further 100 domestic trophies. There are a fair few notable former players. Most famous is probably Jackie Milburn. He played 353 times for Newcastle between 1943 and 57 and went on to play 60 times for Linfield before retirement. Roy Carroll made 88 appearances for Linfield after an illustrious career in England and Europe. At the age of 45, he still plays between the sticks for Ballymenard United in the NIFL Championship. A few other names that you could possibly recall are Warren Feeney, Paul Dalgleish, Kenny Irons, Fitzroy Simpson, and the current manager is David Healy. And of course, there are some Albion links too. An Albion Roar favourite to start, Steve Penny carved out his youth career at Linfield before his move to Ballymena as a senior in 1981. In 83, he moved to the Albion and made 138 appearances between 83 and 1991. Goalkeeper Alan Blaney played 20-odd times for Brighton on loan for Southampton in 2005. He went on to play 118 times for Linfield between 2009 and 2014. And finally, current Albion under-18 midfielder Rory McConville joined us from Linfield in 2021. So thanks for that. Of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com.
Neem is still the only one I've ever got, I think, on those shirts.
There'll be a few more, I'm sure, Brian, at some point.
It's still a better ratio than me then, Brian.
Al, we have some news on the notice board this week.
We do. For those of you who, you may have seen the news from about a month or so ago, the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, or the committee for the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, have decided to wind down fundraising operations, which is, when I say operations, we're basically talking about the annual challenge match between Brighton fans and Palace fans. We're talking about the quiz night and the annual golf day, which was always used to be organised by, well, originally Tony Langridge, and then his son Mike took over the reins for that. Robert's father, Douglas, passed away at Christmas at the age of 99. And the family, I think it was kind of a little bit of a shove their way to say everything runs its course, everything has its time. Douglas was obviously a very, very keen supporter of the charity. He took immense pride and immense comfort from a charity bearing his son's name, which was ultimately such a force for good for so many children's charities and projects around the world. Administering the charity does take up a lot of time, which the family, the Robert sisters, are reluctant to carry on. And I think that their attitude is more along the lines of, you know, we've had 22 years, we've had a really good run, we've raised £330,000 for so many projects, and it's now time they feel to let their dear brother rest in peace. And obviously the committee is in full agreement with that. So we've just got one more event to go, and it's going to be the 21st and final Robert Eaton Memorial Fund Challenge match, which is going to take place on Friday, the 2nd of June, to the Amex, kickoff at 7 o'clock. Tickets are available online. You might have to go via the social media to find out where they're at. They're £6 for adults, £2.50 for under-16s, free if those under-16s are accompanied by an adult. So you buy your tickets in advance. We'll be using the East Lower only for that. It's the day before the cup final, so everyone might have their things, their minds on other events that particular weekend. But yes, that's the way that we're going to close down the fundraising for the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, is the final challenge match. The winner gets to keep the trophy, and it's going to take place on Friday, the 2nd of June at the Amex. For further details, watch this space and look out on social media.
I still have nightmares about that last game at the Amex, Al. I mean, it was like, I mean, there's ringers and there's ringers, right? And
they took sort of what do you call it, sportsmanship to a new extent, didn't they? I mean, you're supposed to have your ringers on for about 20 minutes at a time. They had Sean Derry and Andy Johnson on for the whole game.
For 90 minutes.
Yes.
And we had Kieran Maguire.
Yes. And what won it? An Andy Johnson penalty. Who knew?
Actually, no, we had Kieran Maguire before anyone knew who Kieran Maguire was, actually.
This is it, yeah. We also had Gary Nelson that day.
We did
as
have
well.
Gary Nelson, and yes. And Gary how many players did he beat at Brentford now, Al? I can't remember.
Is 92 players, opposition and teammates, 3 refs, 6 linos, 2 stadiums, an airport, Heathrow. I mean, it's not going to be any further afield. A couple of high court injunctions. I think he got past a small part in the fatal attraction and maybe took part in another game during that run, beating those defenders. Oh, and a dog, of course. He even paid to get back in before planting it into the top corner.
Yeah. Yeah, but obviously the kit at that game, we're going to be wearing the red shirt. Why is that, Al?
Well, it's an amusing aside I heard, but I can well believe it. For anyone who's wondering why they can't buy the Albion home kit, the Japanese have basically taken the lot. For those who don't go to the game and may or may not notice, we've noticed it at home and away games, just how many Japanese people there are at the game. And we're not necessarily talking people who are UK residents or UK studiers. They fly in for it. Mitoma is it must be the latest Elvis Presley over in Japan. I mean, he must be bordering on sort of demi-deity status, because they come over here and, like I say, they've just basically cleaned us out of home shirts. So the red shirts are the only ones that the Albion can lend to the Renf team. I mean, you were saying yourself, Brian, earlier, weren't you, that you've done loads of media stuff in Japan. Give us a flavour as to what's the kind of superstardom status that Mitoma holds over there.
Well, initially, it all started when there was no J-League going on and there was no baseball. So that's how it was explained. And there was a massive upsurge in it when he scored that goal against Liverpool in the FA Cup. But I've lost track of the amount of TV stations or streaming stations who I've spoken to. I think there was one, was it Fuji TV or something? 2 different people have gotten to me. So these are sort of like this on Zoom, people ringing from there or linking up from their offices. Quite surprised to see them still wearing COVID masks, actually, at the other end when they first appear on the screen. And they ask about what do the fans make of him? How's he doing? Which big club could he join next? And how much is he worth? But that's not really, they don't really stress that point too much. It's more about how popular is he and do Japanese people go and watch him and all this sort of thing. And I also get the impression they don't quite understand how well he's doing. And I'm having to say, you know, he is literally one of the most exciting players in the toughest league in the world, and he's being spoken about. And somebody said,
not just the Brighton, the whole league.
Yeah, in for the whole league. Yeah, and they're saying, oh, but what about the rest? That you know, he's big in Brighton. What about the rest of the league? And I said, literally, I showed him some newspapers from the day after the Liverpool game in the FA Cup, and I said, look, BBC 5 Live. If you've heard of that, but BBC, they've just done a 10-minute piece on him about how good he is. So I've done about 3 via Zoom. I did a piece at the training ground with a TV station, a piece at the Royal Albion in their hotel room where I went up and they had like a little ad hoc sort of studio and we spoke about him. And then they went out and came and knocked on the door and I had to pretend it was where I lived. So, oh, nice to see you. Come on in. So that was quite and then that was a Beam. Was that a Beam? I can't remember. And there was Nippon TV who were at the game on the West Ham game. And I did a piece with them in the press conference area. after the game, after the press conferences have been finished, so like at about 6:30 or so. So, and I've written a piece in English for somebody who translated it, and there was another one. It was a Zoom interview, but it was like for a newspaper reporter. He was taking notes. It wasn't a TV thing. So that's all since sort of mid-January, even later than that. So that's the sort of interest that's been going on about him. And I, like I say, I don't think they all realize how big he is. And just a couple more on those, on that, by the way. When I walked to the training ground on Friday for the press the Derby's press conference, there was 5 Japanese youngsters waiting outside in the road that leads to the training grounds. I don't know if I should advertise you can do this, but you do see, mainly in the school holidays, you see kids waiting. I think famously McAllister stopped to show some kids his World Cup medal once. And 2 hours later, when I came back out, they were still there. So still, and I said, oh, I haven't seen him. I don't know when he's going to be coming. He said, oh, no, he stopped. He was really nice. And he signed our shirts. Were waiting outside the training ground, and the reason why they were still there is they wanted Welbeck as well.
We were saying on the show last week or the week before about when we were coming out of the press area at Palace, and the fact that there was, it must be about 150, 200 Japanese people waiting to meet their hero, and you know, and there was quite a lot of Ecuadorians there as well. Yeah, more on that later. And but they're all there to meet, you know, their heroes too. And it's, you know, this is, you know, we've come such a long way from a Porter cabinet with Dean to being having to travel 72 miles for a home game. You know, it was this the worldwide focus that is on us at the moment. It's just breathtaking, to be honest.
It's just the incredulity. I think what you're trying to express here, Aidan, I think a lot of us are doing so, especially those who were at Hereford, especially those from with Dean and Gillingham, what have you. You're pinching yourself a little bit. You know, here we are, we're doing quite well, winning some games, we're turning over teams that we hitherto hadn't done so, beating teams we hadn't done at their ground for 60 years, and so on and so forth. I'm thinking, well, we've done well before. We've got into the top 6, albeit then fell away a little bit. We've got to the cup quarter final before, albeit only 5 times in 120 odd years, and so on. But it's actually, this is the culmination of absolutely everything, and you still know. And this is where we daren't hope to dream just yet, because I don't think we're at the pinnacle.
This isn't even the tip of the iceberg. This is, we haven't even got anywhere near the iceberg yet. We're like,
well, no, we're not far off the top of it. We're for us to be champions material, for us to win the Premier League, we're talking about another huge leap again. You know, to get from the sort of like the 6th to 8th, or, you know, even the 5th to 8th sort of area that we're talking about is one thing. And it's a leap that, to be honest, I didn't think we'd make this year. I thought it would be another couple of years, but we've made it. But to get them from that to, you know, to sort of top 2 or anything like that is another leap again. So the point is that there is still improvement. We haven't hit the glass ceiling. And I think that we're just
Ask
drinking
us.
It all in, that this incredible surge to, you know, up the table that we've had, and the worry for me, and it is only one worry, is the nature of how sustainable it is. It's not how good it is or how successful it is, it's how sustainable it is.
Well, this is the thing, Brian, because I mean, the best players don't win leagues, the best teams do. And the problem, the issue with us is going to be, is can we keep this team together? We've already lost Trossard this season. We could have quite easily lost Caicedo. Mitoma's on everybody's radar. If we can keep this team together, and obviously keep building, adding to it the way that we have done, I mean, there's no guarantee that the next player off the rank is going to be as successful as the one as the last one's in. But no, you know, this could be incredible for us.
Not to mention the head coach and his staff.
For sure,
there's been an awful lot, which is, so I suppose it's keeping the model, keeping the methods, keeping the practices in place, isn't it? Rather than individuals, because it's not sort of based on one or two star players who come in and done this for them. And it's keeping ahead of the game, because I'm sure our other clubs are looking at how Brighton do things and copying or taking ideas. Did I see that Chelsea were going to sign a young player from Ecuador? somewhere along, yes, somewhere not long that. Ago. Quite a good
that.
Idea.
But, I mean, that's not exactly a surprise, bearing in mind who their recruitment people are,
yeah,
and who
that's what I'm saying. So it's almost keeping ahead of the game or keep doing what they're doing. I suppose Brighton do have a little bit of a leeway in terms of having time. I wonder how important, for example, as well, having Union Saint-Gilloise there as a top-flight club, how that might help players progress, take that next step. Because there's an awful lot of players out on loan at the moment, and it won't take many of those to be a Mitoma type to help them not take a next level, but to maintain sort of where they are.
Well, absolutely. Don't forget, AD, you know, De Zerbi himself made a lot of noises and a lot of overtures. Now, admittedly, the club don't like to do business in January if it can possibly help it. But, you know, De Zerbi has identified places where he'd like the squad to improve. So as good as this team is, and it's wonderful that, you know, that the direction of travel that we're on, clearly that De Zerbi feels that he can only achieve so much with this squad and he wants to improve it. I mean, you have to improve a squad. You have to bolster a squad anyway. Now, that could be by returning loan players that Brian has mentioned, or it could be players that we don't know about, mm-hmm, or that maybe De Zerbi has played, you know, has played with before. So, yes, it's as much, there are certain players that every Albion fan wants us to retain. But we shouldn't be so horrified if one does go, and it's not because of its silly money, but because they feel that what is coming in is better. And we just, you know, we have no choice because it's not a democracy, but to trust the process. And so far, certainly in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, given the recruitment, it's been pretty much second to none. So yeah, what's to say it won't continue?
And with those, and the way we do business, Brian, as well. I mean, we very rarely do stuff in January anyway. And you know, it's not, transfers aren't something that just, oh, I'm going to sign this player tomorrow. It takes a lot longer than that. You have to get all your ducks in a row first.
Well, it's not right. These are who we're going to sign in January. January finishes. Okay, on to the next window. There could well be players who were linked with Brighton for the January window who actually come in the summer. We saw that with Buonanotte when there was many suggestions he was going to sign last summer, and the word I was given was not necessarily one for this window. And as soon as January comes around, he's here. I think Joel Veltman has said recently that he knew for a couple of years that there was a good chance he'd come to Brighton. There was something similar with Lallana. So yeah, it won't be right. January's finished. Okay, what are we going to do next time? So I hesitate to say this in a way because there will be things in process. In progress already, and I know that I should be probably telling you who they are, but I'm afraid I don't know. There will be things.
We're not that club anymore, Brian. Anyway, that's all we got time for, and so thank you so much to listening, and thank you to Alan Wares, to Brian Owen. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with allfootballshirts.com. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye. Sing it in the morning.